So one day, two of Jesus' disciples, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said, "We want to sit at your right and your left hand when you come into your kingdom." Jesus said, "Oh, really? Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" And they said, "We are able." Now, can you relate to that? They're all puffed up and proud, thinking they can do anything without having a clue about what they are talking. Personally, I think men have a bigger problem with this than women. I'm just saying, just my opinion. Anyway, Jesus sets them straight, telling them what was to happen to him, how he will be crucified, and how life for the disciples will get very hard. But they just looked at him like he was Donald Trump at a Hillary Clinton rally. The idea just didn't fit. They couldn't see how suffering was in their future. But that would soon change. Within 10 years of Jesus' crucifixion, James, the brother of John, one of the two who boasted that he was able, would be arrested by Herod. After holding him for a short time, he was brought out and, well, just let me read it. "About that time, King Herod laid violent hands upon some who belonged to the church. He had James, the brother of John, killed."
Wait. Okay. I think I can take it from here. It was my head Herod was after. It's my story to tell. I believe I'm qualified to tell it. I'm James, one of the sons of Zebedee, and one of the first disciples of Jesus. Most people don't know who I am. You ask folks to name the disciples, and they'll remember Peter. They'll tell about the things he did. He walked on water. He took off the ear of the slave in the garden. He denied Jesus 3 times. They'll remember Matthew because he wrote a gospel. They'll even remember Thomas because he doubted. Do you know how disconcerting it is to have people remember a disciple who doubted and they forget you because of your faith? They'll look at me and say, "Well, what did you do?" And I say, "Well, I was the first disciple to die." And they say, "Well, did you do anything else?" They sometimes confuse me with my friend, the brother of Jesus, whose name was James. They'll say, "Oh, you were the leader of the church in Jerusalem. We love your letter." They'll even quote it, "The prayers of a righteous person availeth much." And I say, "I didn't write it." And they say, "Well, what did you write?" And I say, "Nothing." And they walk off. Oh, but the ones who drive me craziest are the ones who remember my brother. "Oh, we love John. We love his gospel. We love his letters about loving God and loving other people and love, 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 love." They must be the same folks who watch The Bachelor. No, I didn't write a letter. I didn't write a gospel. I didn't live long enough to become a great leader or to take the gospel to another continent. What is my story? My story is a man who can talk about the power of prayer. Here. Right here. In this place. You see, this is where Herod had me put. He arrested me and other leaders of the church, but because I was the only disciple, he determined to have me executed because this was going to please the religious leaders. The Herods, they're crazy. They're politicians. They only care about their power and doing the things that get people all worked up. I know you don't have politicians like that today. But I sat here and I realized what was happening to me and how alone I was. And I started to think about that. I started to focus on how I was by myself now. And I was petrified. Do you ever notice how fear and feeling alone feed off each other? I mean, it's bad enough to face something awful, something hard, but when you feel like you're going to face it alone, that's what makes the thing unbearable. Now, I'm not the bravest person in the world, but if I know I'm not alone, I feel like I can face just about anything. But if I'm alone, I'll crumble. I sat here and I started to crumble. Now, this is where you find an important difference with people. When some people find themselves in a place where they're going to crumble, they have to pretend to get through it. They have to think about it not being real. They say things like, oh, prison's not so bad. You're going to be fed, you're going to get rest, and in a few days, you're going to go home. Have you ever eaten prison food? It's pretty darn bad. When it comes to rest, well, I suppose you could say that in prison, you sleep like a rock. Literally, like a rock. Now, the guy in the cell next to me, oh, he slept like a baby. He woke up and cried every hour. And as for getting out, I knew that save a miracle of God, I was not getting out of here. And I knew within 24 hours, I would be dead. What do you do? What do you do when you find yourself in this place? So all of a sudden, an idea came to me. What would Jesus do? What would Jesus do if he were here in my place? And the first thing that came to mind is Jesus would pray. He always prayed. That's the first thing that impressed us as his followers, how much he prayed. One day in Capernaum, he had been performing miracles into the night. We were exhausted, and we weren't even the ones doing the work. But the next morning, before the sun was even up, we could not find him. We searched everywhere. He was outside of the village. And when we found him, we said, whoa, what are you doing? He said, I'm spending time with my dad. With your dad? I mean, we knew that his dad had died some years ago. And then we realized this was how he talked about God. Who talked to God this way? He would pray to begin the day. He would pray to end the day. He was like a living prayer. And we could tell the difference. We could tell when he came back from a time of prayer, he was a new person. He had new strength, new energy. He had new faith. He had new hope. He gave us hope. He had joy. So we said one day, how do you pray? When we pray, nothing happens. Something happens when you pray. What do you do? What do you say? And as he would sometimes do, when he was about to tell us something important, he would say, now let's all get together right now. I want to make sure all of you hear this. And we'd get in a circle and he'd put his hands on us. He would say, when you pray, pray like this. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. So, here in this cell, I just started praying, our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy name, thy name. And I realized we don't talk to God that way. We never say God's name. That's a violation. God is too holy. God is too powerful to treat so casually. And yet Jesus did. He talked to God like a daddy. He said that this great and powerful God is one who wants to be known like a dad to his kids. He even told a story one time. He said, how many of you, as imperfect as you are, would ever say to one of your children, if they ask you for bread, it's going to give them a rock? If they ask you for fish, you're going to give them a serpent? No, of course not. Even imperfect parents want to love their kids. That's how God wants to love us. Sitting right here, all I could think about was my dad. I would have given anything if I could see my dad again. Zebedee, working in the fishing boat out on the sea, seeing the sweat pour off his head, yelling to us to tighten the ropes and pull the fish in. I just sat here and I just started to cry. I would have given anything just to have my dad with me. And then I remembered something else Jesus said. Ask and it will be given. Ask and it will be given. And I said, Lord, I wish I could have my dad with me right now. And the strangest feeling came over me. It was just like God was right in this cell and he said to me, can I be your dad? Can I be your dad right now? I started to realize I wanted to be out of here. I wanted this to go away. But what I really needed was just God with me right now. And I just started to pray, God, just be with me. Don't let me be alone. Something started changing. So I kept praying. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Thy will be done. Thy will be done. All of a sudden, I remember the first time I heard those words. In an instant, I was transported back in time to that night. The night I heard Jesus pray those words, that was the night it all changed. We shared the Passover together. The week started so triumphantly. We came into Jerusalem like a parade, Jesus riding a donkey, children laying palm branches in front of him, people shouting. We got to Passover and he said, I've been looking so forward to having this meal with you. But then it all changed. He said, I won't share it again until it's fulfilled in the kingdom of God. We didn't know what that meant. And then he said, one of you will betray me. No one said a word. It's like everything changed right then. Then he took bread and he broke it and he said, "This is my body. Eat, remember me." Why do we need to remember him? He's right here with us. He lifted up the cup of Elijah. "Drink from this," and he passed it to us. And then we went to the garden. He told us, "I want you to stay here. I want you to pray for me." And then he took three of us, my brother, Peter, myself. And we went further. He said, "Now I really need you to pray for me." And he went ahead to be alone. We were tired. We dozed off. But all of a sudden, I woke up. I heard the strangest sound. It was like a sigh, a whine, a cry, but whispers and words. And I woke up and I crept forward and I realized it was him. He was praying. He was looking up in the moonlight saying, "Father, please take this cup away from me. Please, please do not let me face this. If it is at all possible, take it away." "But thy will be done. Thy will be done." He knew what it was like to be here. We did not know what was going to happen to him the next day. We didn't know he was going to be arrested. We didn't know he was going to die, but he did. He knew what it's like to sit in this space when you don't know what's going to happen to you and you sure don't have any control. And he gave me a prayer to pray. "Thy will be done." But how? How do you pray thy will when it's not my will? I didn't want this. I didn't want to be in this place. But as I prayed, I found that rather than getting out of this place, God was wanting to help me in this place. It's sort of like when people pray about patience. You know, I find most of the time when people pray for patience, "Oh, God, give me patience," they're really not asking for patience. They're asking for a calmer life. They say, "I want patience." They just want things easier. You pray for patience, guess what? God's going to put you somewhere where patience is required. People say, "Oh, God, give me deeper compassion." People don't want deeper compassion. They want people who are easy to love. But you pray for deeper compassion, God will put you around people you find hard to love, and that's what makes love bigger. But how do you pray? How do you pray thy will when it is not my will? You die. That's how. All you've got to do is die. You get the most amazing insight when you die. You should try it sometime. You see, after I died, Herod saw that the religious leadership loved it. So he had Peter arrested. He put Peter right here in the same jail cell. And he was going to have Peter arrested. But now the whole church started praying. And God created a miracle and set Peter free. You see, something happened when I got executed. The church was galvanized. Things had gotten comfortable. There was a time of peace. Oh, the church was growing. Everyone was happy, but they weren't dependent on God. But when I died, it changed everything. It galvanized people. Sometimes people say, but don't you ever feel like that wasn't fair? I mean, why didn't God create a miracle and set you free as well as Peter. Why did God do it for Peter and not you? But that's just because they don't understand. They don't see the big picture. That God could take what happened to me and do something big with it. What I needed most was God just to meet me right here and to let me know I wasn't alone and to trust that God will work through it. Sometimes you have to die. You just gotta die to things going the way we want, to God doing what we feel like God's got to do if we're going to believe and if we're going to trust. And sometimes our trust has got to get a lot bigger, where we would believe that even if it doesn't go the way I want, I'm okay with it. Because I might not understand right now, but I'm going to believe anyway that God can take what happens to me and do something big with it. So what do you do when you're here? You pray. You pray, thy will be done. Like, you know what it's like to be here, don't you? I mean, you've been here before, haven't you? You've been in this place that is not where you want to be. You've been in this place where your options in life have changed. And all you can think about is, God, get me out of this place. And God might be saying to you, I want to help you in that place. You know what it's like to be here when you are tempted to say, there's no hope now. There is absolutely nothing good that can come out of this place in my life. And God might be saying, you can't see it now, but never count me out. Maybe you know what it's like to wear these. Some freedoms in your life have been taken away. Maybe you know what it's like to be chained. You can't do all the things that you once did. Life is different. And all you can think about is, God, just break these chains. God says, I want to show you how to live with freedom, even if you wear chains. You see, Jesus was chained. Jesus was in this place. And while this place in by no means is a blessing, there's nothing about this place that is a blessing, and yet it held a blessing. Because right here, I experienced Jesus' presence in a way that I never did when he was alive. I felt the power that I watched going on in him get in me. And when I stopped resenting my chains, I could accept them. And when I accepted them, I was able to see what Jesus could do. Is there anything you need to die to today? Is there anything you need to die to? Do you need to die to the temptation to rewind your life so that it gets back to a place where you wish it still was? Do you need to die to that? Is it time to let that go? Do you need to die to life always working the way that you see that it needs to work and trying to play God yourself so that as it works out according to a way that you can find hope in it, that you'll be okay, that you'll be this great person of faith? Do you need to die to say, God, I'll trust you no matter what? Maybe sometimes the chains we wear are of our own making. We've done this, maybe. We need to die to those things as I just prayed, Lord, your will be done. And I quit asking for God to get me out of here. I was able to find God in here. I was able to find him present. So I just prayed, our Father who art in heaven. And as I kept praying that prayer, you know whose voice I heard? I didn't hear my voice. All of a sudden, I heard all the voices of my other disciples when we would pray it together. I heard Jesus' voice when he prayed it with me. And every time I pray that prayer, it reminds me, I am not alone. I am not alone. Anytime we get together, we should say that prayer so that when there's a time we feel alone, we'll remember we're never alone. We're never alone. We should always pray together. We should always say it out loud and proud and strong and full of hope and faith. And so we say, our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Not one time, not every now and then, not occasionally. Forever.
I'm going to invite you to pray with me for just a moment.